Welcome back to Sports Talk with Vince Farrar. I'm Jimmy Himes. Pleased to be joined now by Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, the fit specialist. Doc, how you doing?
I am good, guys. Good to be with you.
You sporting some New Balance?
Actually, I am. I always have my New Balance, the most comfortable shoes that I wear this past weekend because we all need to be wearing masks, obviously, if we're in close proximity or indoors. So we decided to go out to a trail and sort of walk and hike and had my New Balance on. And I realized they're great shoes to work out or walk in, but, man, they were so comfortable and so comfortable hiking, which is one of the things that New Balance talks about, is one of the reasons that shoes are so popular, because there's a width and stability associated with those shoes. Anyway, long story short, they're even better hiking. So I really enjoyed wearing them over the weekend, and I have them on right now, just finishing a workout and getting ready to chat a little sports. But love the folks at New Balance of Knoxville with a perfect fit every time. They'll go in and set over 75 models to choose from. Go in and let see Sharon and her fine staff, and they'll take great care of you.
Doc, there was a lot of action in Kentucky over the weekend. So we had a truck race, a couple of Xfinity races, a cup race. Cole Custer, now I read this, I thought it was interesting. So he has a last lap pass. He wins the race, the Cup Series. He is the first rookie to win in nearly 4 years. It's a rookie on the circuit. And the first rookie since 2007 to win a non-rain-delayed Cup race. A big win for Custer.
Yeah, it was what an incredible finish. It was a restart. They had four caution flags in the last 59 laps, and Kevin Harvick, who had never won there, the only major track that in NASCAR now that he had not won on previously, he somehow cycles up from like 19th place through all the cautions and pit stops. He's up there trying to lead, Martin Truex Jr., Ryan Blaney. And then they have a restart, and with one lap to go, they are four wide across the start-finish line with Cole Custer coming down on the inside. Harvick and Blaney bounce off each other. Blaney was on the apron. His car caught the apron, came up, got the inside of Harvick. Truex was on the outside. He and Harvick got together a half a lap before that and got Harvick a little bit out of shape, who was leading. It was a wild, wild finish. And guess what? This kid, Cole Custer, he's a rookie, as you mentioned, and he has a split second to make a decision. And he makes a decision to turn hard left and go down on the bottom of the racetrack on the final lap, and he's able to make the pass and hold him off on the white flag lap and get the win. Yeah, becoming the first rookie to win a NASCAR Cup Series race since, Chris Buescher did it back in 2016. So not only does he win the race and get his first victory, he's a teammate of Kevin Harvick, so he outruns the alpha dog on the team for the Stewart Haas team. He punches his ticket to the All-Star race this Wednesday night at Bristol Motor Speedway, and he pushes himself in the playoffs, in the championship playoffs end of the year by getting that win. So a huge, huge day for Cole Custer. I think he had led a total of four total in his Cup career as a rookie this year prior to yesterday. So, yeah, I mean, that just goes to show you that you never say die, and they kept working on the car, and suddenly there he is in victory lane.
He had won an Xfinity race on this same track last year, so I would think that familiarity might have helped him in the Cup race, Doc.
It did. I think it did, but these Cup cars with so much more horsepower, the power-to-weight ratio, the rules for the Cup cars are quite a bit different in terms of the draft numbers, the high downforce numbers. But it's a good point, Jimmy, because he becomes just one of a handful of drivers, by the way, in NASCAR history to now have won a race in the Truck Series, the Xfinity Series, and the Cup Series. So he's a winner in all the Stepping Stone Series going up to Cup, and now as a rookie gets that win. His dad, by the way, Joe Custer, is a president of Stewart Haas Racing. So he's the president of the company, and Cole, didn't get there because his dad was president. He earned it. He was a very promising driver coming, as I mentioned, through the trucks and through the Xfinity. But his dad wasn't even there. His dad was at home watching the race at home because, spectators couldn't come, and you're limited by, I think, 16 total people per team. So his dad is sitting there and watches his son win his first ever Cup Series race from his own living room, jumping up and down with his mom. But, you know, how cool is that for a young man to get that kind of win? And the sad part here again is the fact that the fans couldn't be here to see it.
Vince, you got a question?
Yeah, Doc, how do you think NASCAR has handled the season overall with its return? Obviously, there was the Jimmy Johnson positive test that he's bounced back from, but how would you summarize how the return has gone for NASCAR overall?
Well, great question, Vince. I don't know if anyone could have done anything any better than what they did, given all the uncertainty and the circumstances of what we've dealt with COVID and the shutdown, the quarantine. You know, motorsports, as we mentioned before, is uniquely geared to be able to compete because it's an outdoor sport. The spectators, while you love having them there, you can compete, and you're able to get social distancing and separation because of the way the teams are pitted and they're separated on pit boxes. The drivers can come to the racetrack, sit in a motor coach or a car in the infield and walk right to the car and get in. They're not allowed to go to the garage area. There's no practice, no qualifying. NASCAR was able to get back going because they were able to utilize tracks that were in a one-day drive to and from where most of the race shops are. So you didn't have to get on airplanes. You don't have to stay in hotels. You don't have to go to restaurants. And so you can maintain some separation and some safety there. You know, they really worked well. Politically, they really worked well, if you want to say across the aisle, because they had governors who were Republican governors, Democratic governors, others who stepped up to say, okay, we get what you're trying to do. We want to see it in action. So they went to South Carolina. Then they went to Darlington. Then they went to Charlotte. Then they went to Martinsville, Virginia, Bristol, Tennessee. I think the Texas governor was the very first one to step up and say, you can come here. The only problem was it's a little too far to go on a one-day trip. But that gave others the idea that, hey, we can do it this way. And I think NASCAR has done a phenomenal job. And now the payoff is going to be probably this Wednesday night. I realize there's a lot of concern. We can talk about that in a minute. But the fact that you're having the All-Star race back in Bristol, you know, in a state of Tennessee, but they're going to allow up to 30,000 fans there. They've got a plan how they're going to do it and how specifically they're going to let them in and out. But and the fact they're getting new fans every day, fans of other major league sports that can't compete or aren't competing for whatever reason, they're turning on and watching a live NASCAR race, even in prime time during the week. So I think the numbers reflect that, and I think the sponsorships on the car that we're seeing starting to emerge now are also reflecting that.
Doc, there have been the stories. I saw one on USA Today that talked about how sports has access to so many of these tests, and they're testing their athletes repeatedly, not only before they enter a bubble or are on campus, but even when they're there, those follow-up tests within. Do you think that puts a burden on the rest of the nation in sports having access to as many tests as they are, or is it a mixed bag? How do you view sports gaining access to these testing when some people in their neighborhood might have to wait 2 to 5 days or in a 2-hour line to get a test?
Well, I mean, it's obviously, you know, there's a privilege there involved with what they're doing. And many times that's associated with a private lab that someone's willing to pay the bills for to get a private lab to fly in this and fly this in and fly it out and get the test done. And you and I don't have access to that because we don't have the financial resources to do that. On the other hand, there are sports. Sports are not being given priority. For example, I was talking to a colleague of mine an hour ago who's supposed to be one of the broadcasters on the U.S. Open, the tennis, and they're still trying to decide, you know, is it going to happen? It's supposed to happen August 31st, you know, at Flushing Meadow. The problem is many, many of the tennis players, and whether you're in Serbia or France or whatever, they may or may not be allowed to come back or may not want to be allowed to come back in the U.S. to compete. Do they still have that? And they're not going to make exceptions. If they can't get in, they can't get in. Now, their slot will be taken by someone else. So it's a plus and minus. It's a, you know, yes, the testing is available, but sometimes the athletes, I know there was a friend of mine at college who's a son of a college golf coach, and many of his golfers on the golf team are from or live outside this country. They can't get back either. They don't think they're going to be able to get back to play golf if there's a golf season. So there's a lot of negatives that the athletes have to endure, especially those who live outside the country.
Doc, there was interesting also in Kentucky with the race and the Xfinity race. Austin Cindric, he won back-to-back days on Xfinity races, and I read that's the first time that someone has done that in the same series since 1971. A guy named Richard Petty was the last to do that.
Yeah, whatever happened to him, by the way? Did he amount to much, this Richard Petty guy? Yeah, yeah. How about that? I mean, and Austin Cindric, if you meet this guy, Jimmy, you and Vince meet Austin Cindric. First of all, he's about 6'7". His dad, Tim Cindric, was a really good college basketball player up in Indiana. And so he's the president of Team Penske. And then Austin looks like his dad. He's very athletic, but he grew up in open wheel racing, driving open wheel cars on road courses and street courses. So he had getting into a stock car last year. I mean, he had not won ever on an oval in a stock car until he won Thursday night in the Xfinity race at Kentucky. And then he wins again on Friday night. How about that? So he wins back-to-back. His very first two ever oval track wins, in a stock car are at Kentucky. And he did a heck of a job. He drove a smart race. He's a very, very intelligent kid, very poised, very composed, stayed out of trouble. Now, there was some shuffling and pushing and shoving during the race. And after the race, there was a little bit of a fight in the pits between two fairly notable drivers, and Noah Gragson and Harrison Burton, Jeff Burton's son, over they agreed to disagree, and then they agreed to push and shove and swing and disagree. So that is a pretty aggressive a racing series there. But hey, Cindric comes out on top in both nights.
I wonder if they were wearing masks.
I didn't see any masks anywhere. and if they would have had them on, they'd have been pulled off by each other as they were grabbing uniforms and trying to be separated by about. And neither did the 25 people who descended on the fight and tried to pull them apart. None of those guys had masks on either. But all I can say is, if they keep doing that kind of stuff and show that kind of intensity, I don't want to see them fight. But that kind of intensity, that kind of I want it that bad. That reminds me of the early days of racing. It reminds me of the Allisons and the Yarboroughs and stuff. And that's people watching, people who don't have anything else to watch and are watching that would be watching something else in sports. That's a win-win for NASCAR in terms of the fans.
Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch, ESPN. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. When we come back, we'll talk to him about the possible return of the IROC series and also what Bristol is going to try to do in terms of social distancing with the up to 30,000 fans that they hope to might draw for the All-Star game this Wednesday night. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes. You're listening to Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Making average people feel more attractive since 1876. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Ferrar. Our special guest, Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN, his appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, the fit specialist. Doc, I want to ask you about this. You got Stuart Everham. They're looking at recreating the IROC series. What else can you tell us about that?
Yeah, the International Race of Champions was a series that was developed by former NASCAR Vice President Les Richter and Jay Signore years ago under the tutelage of Roger Penske, where you brought the best drivers from around the world in any series, from Formula One, from IndyCar, from NASCAR, from road racing, off-road, wherever, the top two or three drivers. You put them in identically prepared cars. They didn't get to pick the car. They didn't get to bring their own car. And you put them in a racetrack, and you let them race to see who was the best driver. The cars are the same, essentially the same, and they said, who's the best driver? They ran them on road courses and ovals. Unfortunately, there were many of the cars, the races were on ovals, and so the guys who were stock car drivers or some of the guys who had more oval track experience maybe had a little bit of an advantage. But still, there were others who won back in the day. So And so that series went away. It paid $1 million to win the series, to be the highest point total winner for the four races. That went away for lots of reasons, primarily financial. Now Tony Stewart and Ray Evernham have decided to put together a series with a few other principal owners, and it's going to be an IROC series similar or to an IROC series, but it's going to be all on short tracks. My understanding is they may run six races during the summer at notable short tracks. It could be dirt tracks, it could be asphalt tracks, and they're not really sure yet if they're going to invite current drivers, recently retired drivers, legendary drivers, whoever wants to compete may be allowed to come compete. That series, the races, will air on CBS. They do have a commitment that they'll air on CBS. So obviously they got a great network deal. They're still putting it together. They really wanted to roll it out in this summer. Obviously the pandemic had a little bit to do with that, but they're looking toward the summer of 2021. A lot of people are very excited about that. So it's basically, how do you determine who's the best driver? And my understanding is the format, they will show up at a racetrack. These drivers will show up, could be the best from Europe, the best in Formula One, the best in IndyCar, the best in NASCAR, wherever they come from. And they will draw for cars. And then with each car, there is a crew chief that comes with that car. And you get that crew chief in that car that week, and you try to compete and see what you can do. So they're trying to make the playing field as level as possible.
And I understand Tony Stewart might race.
I can't imagine you could keep him out of the car there. He loves short track racing. He loves sprint car racing. I think he's in South Florida this past week at an event, and then he's all over, right? He loves it. He loves that more than about anything else. I mean, he's always said, he did the stock car racing and NASCAR cup series racing But the short track racing, he said, I live to race that. I mean, I love that. That's his passion. That's where he grew up and came from. So I would imagine and you might be surprised some of the other names that might come out of the woodwork that have recently retired or from other series and say, hey, I want to do that. I want to run a couple of those races.
I don't know which driver it was, but one of them said that driving in the truck series and stock car, et cetera, has made him a better driver. Do you think that's true of most drivers?
I think it's like anything else. If you're a Cup Series driver and you step down and you run the Xfinity Series car or you run, say you run 12th to 15th in the Cup car and you go down and you get an Xfinity car and you finish second or third or fourth, you're running the top lead pack, or you go to a truck and you win the race, that builds your confidence. And I think confidence and attitude are so important in any athlete, no matter what you do, whether you're trying to hit a curveball in Little League or whether you're trying to win a stock car race or an Indy car race. If you've got comfort level and a confidence level, then you climb back in that Cup car, you're a different driver. I think it does help them, absolutely.
That's Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. If you got a question, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. You're listening to Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to hour number two of Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Ferrar. We've got a special guest, Dr. Jerry Punch. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, the fit specialist. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. Let's go to the phones where Terry is our first caller with Doc Punch. Terry, how are you?
Fine. How are you all doing today?
Doing fine, thanks.
Dr. Punch, I wanted to make a couple comments on the IndyCar race. It wasn't a great weekend for my driver, Joseph Newgarden, but I think it's showing that these young drivers are here and they're coming on strong.
Oh, absolutely. I think both of the McLaren Schmidt Racing guys, I think proved themselves. They're coming out of the box, and we're seeing – these guys that come in, that some of the younger names that have come from Europe that have been running in the Formula 3 ranks and have been test drivers for Formula 1 are now coming to open wheel racing and being very, very aggressive, and it's seeing it pay off, especially at places like Road America this past weekend.
Yeah, I also thought it was amusing. I don't know what type of driver Paul Tracy was, but I think it was him remarking about Will Power that on the first lap he hit everyone but the helicopter in that second race.
Yeah. Well, that but Paul Tracy should. The old saying was, "It takes one to know one," and Paul Tracy was that guy. He was a really good racer, but he was one of those guys that that was really aggressive. And he didn't mind bouncing off a few things because he knew eventually he was going to be able to – he had enough talent in stock car racing, sort of like a Rusty Wallace. Rusty didn't mind bumping somebody, bouncing off somebody, because he had the talent and ability to take care of his own car and find a way to get to victory lane and win the race. That's the way Paul Tracy was. At times he didn't make a lot of friends, but I think so. Making that comment about Will Power, for those of us who know Paul Tracy, that's pretty funny.
Yeah. Just another quick question. Didn't Joseph Newgarden start out in Formula 3 or somewhere in Europe before he came back?
I think he did. I think he ran, you know, I don't have his bio in front of me, but I did a sit down with him 2 years ago, 3 years ago now, when he first came on board, and we were talking about, you know, how's a kid from Tennessee not wind up in stock car racing, but he always wanted to be an open wheel. If he wasn't going to play baseball for the Yankees, he wanted to be a catcher. So he actually wanted to be an outfielder. His dad wanted to be a catcher for the Yankees, and so he decided to go into open wheel racing. But I'm not mistaken, he did run some of the lesser series in Europe.
Okay, thanks for taking my call, and y'all have a good week.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks for the call, Terry. Let's go to Jerry. Jerry, you're on with Doc Punch.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Jerry. You mentioned him a while ago, but my Xfinity driver in a hurry, if you remember, called a couple of weeks ago, but Austin Cendrick there, he was in such a hurry, won two races over the weekend, and would have won another one there last week, other than NASCAR's idiotic restart system. I've probably talked about that on here before, and I'd like to do it again, but not today. This got to take a whole show to go into that. But I was going to ask you, well, Brad Keselowski, he's kind of my favorite right now, of course, along with Logano and Blaney, but and Brad won a couple of races this year just on pure luck, happened to be in the right place at the right time. But I ain't got nothing to back this up, other than it just seems that in the last 40 or 50 miles of the races, Brad especially, it seems like his car just won't go. You any idea what yesterday in that restart? I mean, he was right up front, but on the restart, it looked like he put his brake on and just went backwards. I just imagine that, or do you have any idea what if that is happening?
Yep. No, I saw the same thing you saw, Jerry. Great, that's a great question, and I saw exactly that same thing happen. Now, I think Brad's been aggressive late in the races, but I think this weekend, I don't know if when Jimmy Johnson pulled down and Brad spun him because he blocked him, and if it damaged the nose on Brad's car. I didn't think Brad's car from that point on, that was like 13 laps ago, I didn't think Brad Keselowski's car from that point on turned well. I don't know if it affected the right front fender enough. It doesn't take much. But I think after that contact with Jimmy Johnson, I just don't think Brad's car ran as well as it did before.
Yeah, it just seemed like he's had that problem in other races. It's, like I said, you know, especially the last few miles, it just seemed like he's trying, but, of course, and it seemed like Logano's had the same problem in some races. Now, Blaney, he's usually up there, but he can't really get to the win either. But the other two, it just seemed like they can't. If something happens. Back years ago when Jimmy Johnson was winning races, of course, I don't know if they ever had a legal car or not when they had fellow's crew chief. Can't think of the name right now. But anyway, when they were winning all that. I mean, just the opposite happened with him. I mean, he'd go through the race and couldn't get out of his own way. And boy, when he'd come down the last 40, 50 laps, all of a sudden his car just become a rocket. And he'd win, you know, and all them wins he got, it was very seldom that he wanted, you know, really coming to the green flag. He usually just won them easily. I mean, he most of the races he won, he was way out front. And like I said, I mean, I know they did get fined a time or two, but they sure had something figured out on that last pit stop.
Yeah, they sure did. I don't know if you saw Jimmy, but I thought that's what happened with Jimmy. I thought that was what was going to happen with Jimmy on Sunday. He was middle of the pack for most of the race, and then began that last segment, began climbing. And then with 15 laps to go, there he is running third, fourth, you know, right there and running really well. And I thought this is going to be the Jimmy Johnson of old. We're going to see him right there at the front of the field now be a contender in these last 10 laps to win this race like he used to. And then there's that contact. He pulls down the block, Brad Keselowski, and he gets spun. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, Jimmy was always the guy there at the end. When it came time to go, you know, it's like they would pull in the reins, and he would just drive the car and take care of the equipment, and they worked on the car to make it better and better until it was time to go in the last few laps.
Okay.
Yeah, it was good. Well, thanks a lot, fellas, and enjoy the show.
Jerry, we appreciate it.
Thanks for the call.
Let's go to Lynn. Lynn, you're on with Doc Punch.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. I hope you're all staying cool today.
Yes, sir.
Doc, I got a couple of questions. One on rules. You're my rules expert. I keep hearing this term. I'm not even sure what the term is, but I think lane selection or something they're going to try Wednesday night where the car that's in front, I guess it would be the odd-numbered cars, gets his lane choice. Is that the way that's going to work? What do they call? I don't remember what they call it, and then what does it? How does it work?
It's called choose. It's a choose coin, a choose cone, and with two laps to go, they do it on a lot of short track races. And NASCAR is willing to experiment with rule changes in the All-Star race since there's no points involved, and so they can try these things and see how they work. So they're going to experiment with this. A lot of drivers have been in favor of it, and a lot of short tracks when it comes time to restart. In the past, the leader could choose if they wanted to go in the outside or inside, you know, whichever lane had the most grip. Now, but at some short tracks, they put a choose cone, which is a cone in the middle of the backstretch. And when you come with that cone with two laps to go, you're under caution. You can veer right if you want to start on the outside, or you can veer left if you want to start on the inside. At some tracks, the inside lane is so slick and slippery that you can't go anywhere. So everybody chooses the outside. Well, what happens if the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth guys all choose the outside, and then you're seventh, and you say, hey, what the heck, I'm going to roll it off. I'm going to start on the inside. So you end up starting on the inside on the restart, and if you can hang on, hey, you might steal one. So that's what the choose cone is. It allows a driver to make a choice, and if the inside lane's a fast lane or the grip lane because of the grip solution, the PJ1 they put down, maybe the top five or six guys choose the inside, and some guy back seventh or eighth says, hey, you know what? I'm gonna do my cold trickle, you know, days of thunder. I'm gonna start on the outside, just try to make it stick. I think it'll make for great racing. I think, you know, NASCAR a few years ago experimented with the double file restarts in the All-Star race, and they were so popular there that they moved them to a regular to all the races. So I think this is something they're gonna look at on Wednesday night at Bristol.
So this is just the last two laps only. So if a caution comes with 100 laps into the race, they're still going to restart it the same way.
Now, my understanding is that on every restart they'll use the choose cone. That when it comes time to restart, they'll put that cone out there, and you choose which side you want to go on it.
All right. Okay, the other one is kind of a follow-up question to what you and Jerry were just talking about, and that was the Keselowski-Jimmy Johnson contact. You know, I think it was year before last, it might have been last year, that Brad got kind of perturbed with a couple of the young guys who blocked him, and he checked up and, you know, sometimes wrecked and all, and he come home after one race, said, I'm done with that. He said, you pull out in front of me, I'm going to run fun through you. And I think that's what happened yesterday. You know, he probably wasn't talking to Jimmy Johnson when he said that a couple of years ago, but I think he's through with being blocked.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You got a great memory. In fact, I think it was last year at Daytona, Brad, some guys pulled down the block, Brad, and he just pulled, punted them out of the way, Earnhardt style. And people were booing and whatever. Hey, you know what? Hey, I'm not here. You know, I'm passing somebody, and you want to run me in the dirt at 190 miles an hour? I'm going to run your bumper in the dirt, and you're going to be out of my way, and I'm going to keep going. He said, eventually people will realize that you're not going to block me. You are not going to block me because I'm going to punch you out of the way. And if NASCAR leaves them alone, which they did and they have, people will get the message. So that'll help with the blocking. Now, I don't think anybody wanted to spin Jimmy Johnson, certainly not Brad. Jimmy Johnson's so popular. But Brad said, hey, on the radio after that happened, he said, hey, you want to run me in the grass? That's what you get. You know, I'm not gonna jam on the brakes to stay behind you just so I can get hit from behind and you can go on. I'm not saving your car. I'm saving my car, and you're going to be out of my way. So, hey, I think the message was sent. The message should be starting to get out there that no matter who you are, I don't care if you're a seven-time champion, you're not going to block me.
Yeah, well, I just thought it kind of went back to something he said a year or so ago. Well, I'm kind of looking forward to Wednesday night. I think the lights under some of those cars will be nice on the track. So I wish the situation I felt comfortable in going. I'm not going to go, but I'd sure like to. But there's just too many people, and I'm too old. But it's going to be fun to watch.
Hey, Lynn,
it is going to be fun to watch.
Yeah.
And by the way, the lights under the cars, they are allowing the teams to put neon lights underneath the race cars. So they'll glow on the track as they go by. They're moving the number from the door, from the doors back to right in front of the rear wheel, so they can use the whole door for sponsorship. You mentioned the choose cone they're doing. A lot of adjustments. It's going to be a wild show at Bristol, I think, on Wednesday night.
All right, look forward to it. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punt of ESPN, his appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. With Vince Farrar, I'm Jimmy Himes. When we come back, we'll have more. You're listening to Sports Talk 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Download the TuneIn app so you can take 99.1, The Sports Animal, with you wherever you go.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Farrar. I guess Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Doc, the All-Star race coming up. We've touched on a little bit, but they're also hoping to have between 20 and 30,000 fans. Do you feel like they have got some safety precautions in place that will help deal with COVID-19?
And Jimmy, I think they do. You know, they realize that this is the largest crowd in the country since the coronavirus pandemic, you know, put a screeching halt to athletic events back in March. They feel like they're going to be under a microscope. And Bristol Motor Speedway General Manager Jerry Caldwell says, we realize we have a tremendous responsibility here for the safety of our fans. This is the first major sporting event to have a significant crowd. Again, you know, when you consider the fact that the place holds 160,000, 30,000 is less than 20% occupancy, and many of the people coming, I'm told, are going to be within a 25-mile radius. The others will be coming from a little further away, which will help the local economy. But they also feel that they've heard from a number of venues around the country that are looking at maybe how they will handle crowds like this in the fall, especially large college football stadiums. And I think a number of those people will be on hand to sort of go to school and try to learn from the template that they're seeing happen this weekend. But what they're doing is they'll have everybody will be required to wear masks as they come in. The employees will be wearing masks. Fans will wear masks, except for when they get to their seats, they can take their mask off. Fans are going to be sitting in the suites. And the top levels will have their temperatures taken. They will all go through some questionnaires. Drink coolers will not be allowed in the seating areas. The passenger trams that normally transport people around the place will only be available to those with limited mobility, although there will be food and souvenir sales available. And another thing is all the tickets are sold digitally, so there's no passing of passing of cash, or you don't have to be confront people at ticket booths to buy those tickets. Now, remember, Bristol Motor Speedway Wednesday night, they're expecting between 20 and 30,000 people, but this following Sunday at Texas, they're allowing 50% occupancy, which means they could allow up to 60,000 people at the Texas race. But, you know, a lot of people prior to this weekend, a lot of people are going to be watching what happens in Bristol on Wednesday night in terms of how they handle it, you know, how they deal with the fans, the parking, and they've got enough room there. Remember, 20,000, 30,000, that's what a lot of people are predicting. If we have college football, a lot of people have been telling me and probably telling you, Jimmy, and the guys, and Vince, that's what they look to maybe be the occupancy at some of these major stadiums so they can maintain social distancing.
I've seen a couple of things that I thought were interesting, Doc, and one was there are some folks at Bristol that are excited about this because they feel like it could help the economy in the area, and others not so happy because they said you bring more visitors into town, it could accelerate the spread of the virus. So I've seen two different camps with that. I just think that if people will social distance, wear a mask, do the guidelines that they should, that should not be a huge issue. Do you see that any differently?
I think the race fans and sports fans in general have been told that if you do that, and I think that they're so excited about coming, and people are being very selective as to who come. If you're immunocompromised or you have other major health conditions, you're obviously not going to come and be among the first to come back. But otherwise, you show up, you park in the prescribed areas which separate cars, you go sit in the prescribed areas which separate people because you got one of the largest sports stadiums in the country, which seats 160,000. I don't know of any college football stadium that comes close to seating that. So you've got a perfect place to put 20 to 30,000 people in there and keep them all apart. And they'll have ways to get to the concession stands, ways to get to the souvenir stands that keeps you separated, yet you get to be there and be a part of what is a special night. You know, I think, I truly believe, you know, I've studied what they're doing. I've talked to people there. I'm going to be there Wednesday night. So I'm going to see it firsthand. You know, I wouldn't be going if I didn't feel comfortable with what they're doing from a safety and a health standpoint. I'm excited to see fans back, but done the right way. And I'm also excited. I think this is going to give me the first glimpse of maybe what I might see this fall at a number of college football stadiums.
Doc, just a quick follow-up to that. How much is Bristol enhancing their staff, whether it's volunteers or employees? Because there is so much at stake to make sure this goes well, at stake for NASCAR and at stake for a lot of people. How much is that being beefed up to try to check to make sure people are following the guidelines to keep everybody safe?
Well, they obviously have been planning this for quite a while, and they feel like the weight of the world is on them because they are going to be under a microscope, you know, and they feel like they don't want to let NASCAR down because NASCAR, it says, okay, here's what we're going to do. We've been very careful and gradually open up, and even though we have this bump in infection in rates in certain states, including here in Tennessee, which seems to be leveling off some now, you know, we were able to get a handle on it back when we did it the first time by social distancing. So, and they feel like they don't want to let Governor Lee down. They want to let NASCAR's executives down and sports in general down by making a mistake. So they will have plenty of volunteer people who also feel like they want to see, you know, it is a catch-22. I think there are more people in the local economy who are excited about having some fans come back the right way, be able to go through a drive-through and get food, or be able to help somewhat the local economy. You realize there's risk in anything you do, but... I think they really have a plan, and I think there couldn't be a better venue to do it. That's why I think this is even better than Charlotte Motor Speedway and others because of how big the arena is. And even though you spread everybody out, there are good seats everywhere for the race.
Doc, what do you think about the Big Ten and the Pac-12 deciding to go to conference-only games in football this fall?
Well, I'm glad they've moved. That's a positive. I was concerned that they wouldn't be able to do that. I think that's being a little bit aggressive, I think, this early, considering what some of the things that they have in some of the states where their member institutions are. You know, I think that, you know, this next week or two is going to be critical as to how much football we see and when we see it, and no matter where it is. And I think that, you know, especially some of the areas in Florida where we're seeing, where we saw 15,000 new cases of coronavirus yesterday. But I think that if the Big Ten and Pac-12 decide they want to play conference only, and then it mandate that the schools have strict guidelines and limited fans, I think that's, you know, it's great to make those plans. If you make those plans, you're going to play those games and maybe you limit the fans, or maybe even at times we're hearing no fans for an early game or two. Like we're hearing no fans will be allowed at the U.S. Open tennis, you know, at the end of August. That's a way to play the event and have the events when in, and then maintain safety by not having people in the stands. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I'm still concerned. I was very confident that we would have a full college football season 3 weeks ago. But after what we've seen the last couple of weeks, especially what's going on in Florida with the beaches jam-packed and the bars and restaurants jammed and people everywhere and the virus levels taken off, maybe we get beyond this because people get infected and we get the, quote, herd immunity, and then the numbers begin to fall. But that's going to have to happen for conference commissioners, even in the South, in the ACC and SEC, to feel good about playing games in states where the numbers are soaring like that.
So with two of the Power Five having already made that decision to go conference only, do you see a scenario where some are doing that and some play a regular schedule? Or do you think this is headed towards all five Power Five conferences doing the same thing and doing conference only?
Well, I think that has to do, you know, with, I mean, the two conferences that did that are just saying we're going to take care of ourselves. We're going to risk it just within the conference because of the need we have for revenue, quite honestly, to play these games. But the schools that we're going to play in the non-conference games that we're going to be played in the Big Ten and the Pac-12 were from the smaller schools. Bowling Green's a prime example of that. All the revenue they were going to get and they were banking on for their budget's gone because that game doesn't exist now. They have two Big Ten games that aren't going to be played. They were non-conference games. So what does the SEC do? I think if, you know, I think it's – I'm glad I don't have to make that decision because now you're looking at – I'm hearing you're looking at significantly reducing the travel squads, you know, numbers to try to be able to protect those that are traveling or even limiting traveling. So, you know, and the fewer times you travel, the fewer exposures you have. So what does that mean? Does he limit the games, the number of games? Does he take away the non-conference games? What does that do to having a week where you can get people healthy, having a week where you can – play somebody, work on something in your system that needs to be worked on. If you have young players in certain positions and you're playing teams that don't have the ability or talent level you've got. So I think that's a tough decision. You know, John Swofford's in his last year in the ACC, and my goodness, I mean, he's been an incredible leader in college sports, and I can't imagine what he's going through and trying to make these decisions. They've already, yesterday they announced they're going to put off their preseason football meetings that were going to be done virtually anyway, a week from after next in July. They've now put those off indefinitely, so that signals a delay right there, and who knows what'll happen with in the SEC in terms of right now. I would hate to make a decision this week about the SEC because it wouldn't be a good one if I were making decisions. I'm hoping they'll wait another week or so and to see what the numbers do and what you can do. I got to imagine. And Jimmy, you probably know as much about this as anybody, but I got to imagine that those conference commissioners are probably on the phone with those head coaches and mostly the athletic directors, saying, okay, if we have to go with this model, there's three or four different options. What would you choose? Would you choose to play conference-only games? And what do you think most of the ADs are going to say? I mean, do you is it revenue? Do you need events? Would you rather err on the side of safety and just play conference-only, you know, games for the year?
I think they'll say conference-only. I do.
I agree.
I think safety issues are involved too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. As much as the Citadel and UAB and some other schools that you play non-conference may need that revenue, I think you got to look at the bigger picture and do conference only probably if it comes to that.
Doc, great to catch up with you. Thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to visiting with you again next Monday.
Well, visit next Monday, and I'll tell you how it is at Bristol on Wednesday night with 30,000 people there, and see what kind of operation and what kind of wild night it should be for stock car racing.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Doc.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Doc. Appreciate it. And that is Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN. Excuse me. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, the Fit Specialist.